morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, May 2nd, 2006. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Becca Bartleson.
Coming up in this morning's newscast, in Oregon, biodiesel prices are now lower than gas or regular diesel for the first time. Across the nation yesterday, more than a million immigrants took to the streets to demonstrate their economic value to the U.S. And Silvio Berlusconi has finally formally stepped down. Portland area weather, sunny today, highs 65 to 70, and tonight, clear, lows in 30s to 40s.
While soaring fuel costs are the bane of most businesses, Oregon makers of biodiesel are celebrating. Their product is now cheaper than the stuff that comes out of the ground. Tyson Kiever of Sequential Biofuels said, "We're selling our biodiesel for less than petroleum diesel out of the rack. Our phone is ringing off the hook as the oil price goes up." According to Portland's Daily Journal of Commerce newspaper, biodiesel sold for 20 to 30 cents a gallon more than regular diesel as recently as March. It is made from vegetable oil, including used oil from fast food restaurants. Demand for the renewable fuel in the state has risen with oil prices, which many expect to keep climbing. In the past month, Sequential has sold out of biodiesel as fast as it can produce it. Small diesel biodiesel co-ops are seeing an increase in membership as gasoline prices climb. Members of Go Biodiesel, a Portland co-op, pay $100 to join and work 6 hours a month for the right to buy pure biodiesel at $2.25 a gallon. The group has about 100 members. Biodiesel distributors heavily invested in building an infrastructure in Oregon hope high oil prices will help them grow.
Thousands of immigrants' rights supporters skipped work and rallied across the state yesterday. It was part of a nationwide boycott intended to showcase the economic clout of the nation's growing Latino population. More than 5,000 people, Hispanic workers, students, families, and others, marched through downtown Portland, and many of them wore white T-shirts to show their solidarity. A boycott was organized by immigrant activists angered by federal legislation that would criminalize illegal immigrants. Protests were also organized in Eugene, Medford, Hood River, and Cannon Beach. The date of the marches coincides with the International Workers' Day. In Medford, about a third of the students taking English as a second language at Road Community College were absent.
Outside the Herb Memorial Union, the heartbeat of the University of Oregon campus, diversity is easy to spot. A sign for International Week lists the Japanese tea ceremony and lectures about Uganda and Saudi Arabia. A banner advertises the Hawaii Club's annual luau. Reggae music pumps from a speaker. But diversity has its limits as the state's flagship liberal arts university. Students and faculty of color, in particular, often say they don't feel welcome or valued on a campus where few people look like them. In Oregon, part of the challenge is demographic. Public campuses recruit most students from a state that is nearly 87% white. Oregon State University in Corvallis also struggles with attracting diverse students and professors. At UO, the past year has been especially tense with the abrupt departure of the university's first diversity chief, the implosion of a campus diversity plan, and a string of racially charged incidents that have made students of color feel isolated and, in some cases, unsafe. The recent search for a new law school dean has added to the boil after a Mexican-American withdrew from the running law school faculty complained that he was treated differently from other candidates and questioned whether race was a factor. This from the Oregonian. And now we'll hear some sounds from the rally downtown yesterday.
As I said before, today is a historic day. Como dije antes, hoy es un día histórico. Today marks a new beginning in immigrant and labor rights. Hoy comienza un nuevo comienzo para los derechos de los trabajadores y los inmigrantes. A historic day
for true freedom and change begins now.
Un día histórico para verdaderos cambios.
The battle over hatchery salmon versus wild salmon in the Klamath River has gone to a federal appeals court. Property rights advocates joined commercial fishermen today in Portland to argue that hatchery fish should be counted with wild fish in deciding whether to limit the commercial ocean harvest of Klamath River fall Chinook salmon. But the government and Indian tribes argue that the law that sets the minimum number of wild salmon returning to the Klamath cannot be changed. A 1989 law set a minimum of 35,000 wild Chinook returning to the Klamath each year. For the third straight year, fishery managers have projected returns below that minimum, leading to a decision to practically shut down commercial salmon fishing on 700 miles of the Oregon and California coast. Lawyers have asked the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for a quick ruling in the case.
Federal agents rounded up 66 immigrants in a series of raids described by officials as a smashing a ring that smuggled Mexicans into the United States and may have forced women to work as prostitutes. Officers with the Bureau of Immigration and Customs Enforcement raided 15 locations in New Jersey and New York. Early immigrants after New Jersey State Police pulled over two vehicles containing at least 10 women who had been working in the brothels in a number of different states. And it was at least the third major immigrant smuggling ring believed to be operating in New Jersey in recent years. Authorities said prosecutions involving Russian strippers who were forced to work in go-go bars and young Honduran women forced to work as hostesses are ongoing in federal court.
One of the biggest protests in U.S. history unfolded across America. Immigrants as more than 100 million demonstrators took to the streets to protest against proposals to toughen immigration law. From New York to Los Angeles and more than 50 cities in between, they streamed out in numbers, waving U.S., Mexican, and El Salvadorian flags. Most of the protesters were Latino, reinforcing what for many was the true impact of the day. The emergence of a powerful Latino political voice, angry at a system which they say judges them good enough to work in the U.S. but not good enough to be citizens. A sea of white-shirt protesters, 300,000 strong, chanting "Si se puede," surged through the Los Angeles. In Chicago, police said up to 400,000 protesters had taken part in a rally. Other large demonstrations took place in Denver, which saw 75,000 protesters, and Houston and San Diego. The street protests were the centerpiece of what organizers dubbed the Great American Boycott, or a day without immigrants. With protesters urged to boycott shops and to stay away from work and school, it was hoped that the immigrant community, which is thought to include almost 12 million undocumented migrants, would be able to bring home its contribution to the U.S. economy. There are about 35 million legal immigrants in the U.S.
A Florida judge told a Palestinian computer engineer immigrants that he must spend another 18 months in prison before being deported. The case is seen as a key test for sweeping anti-terror legislation brought in after September 11th. Sami Al-Aryan, a former professor at the University of South Florida, has been jailed since February of 2003, meaning he has 18 months to serve in the 4-year and 9-month term he received. In sentencing, Judge Jane Moody calls him an active leader in the Islamic Jihad. A verdict was a result of a plea bargain. Aryan was acquitted by jury along with three others in December last year on several more serious terrorist charges, including conspiracy to murder. Aryan has said he was singled out for prosecution because of his support for Palestinian rights. He denies advocating violence. His family said that the professor agreed last month to plead guilty to lesser charges of providing support to the Islamic Jihad in order to get out of prison. Aryan became the target of an FBI investigation as one of the founders of a campus think tank and a charity formed in the 1980s to support a Palestinian state. This according to The Guardian.
A man whose son was convicted of supporting terrorism by attending an Al-Qaeda camp in Pakistan was released after nearly a year in federal custody. Umar Hayat, a 48-year-old ice cream vendor, had been held since he and his son, Hamid, were arrested last June. Umar Hayat was charged with two counts of lying to the FBI about his son's attendance at the training camp. But his case ended in a mistrial last week after the jury said it was deadlocked. Umar Hayat will be under house arrest in the agricultural town of Lodi and was fitted with an electronic monitoring device. A separate jury last week convicted Hamid Hayat of one count of providing material support to terrorists and three counts of lying to the FBI. He faces a maximum of 39 years in prison when he is sentenced July 14th. His attorney is seeking a new trial.
More than a week has passed since jurors in the Zacharias Moussaoui trial began their deliberations, and with each passing day, the chances that the jury will impose a death sentence shrink, experts say. The jury concluded a fifth day of deliberation without reaching a decision on its sentence. Death of Musaki, the only person in the country charged in the September 11, 2001 attacks, or life in prison. So far, in more than 28 hours of deliberating, the jurors have given few clues into their decision-making process. They have asked only one question, a request for a dictionary that was denied by the judge. Experts warn against reading too much into the process, but generally agree that a prolonged deliberation is a sign that at least a few jurors are reluctant to vote for the death sentence. In this phase of the trial, a lack of unanimity clearly favors the defense because jurors are not required to reach unanimous decision. If they disagree on the punishment, Musaki will automatically be sentenced to life in prison. This jury previously found Musaki eligible for execution after more than 16 hours of deliberations in late March and early April. Although he was in jail on immigration violations on September 11th, the jury ruled that he told federal agents the month before the attacks kept them from identifying and stopping some of the hijackers.
On the brink of the 21st century, a group of energy experts peered into the future of natural gas, and what they saw was quite rosy and quite wrong. To satisfy growing demand, producers could crank out a third more natural gas over the next decade at competitive prices. It could power our economy for decades beyond, or so said the National Petroleum Council in its 1999 report. But natural gas prices soon headed skyward, with prices charged by producers spiking late last year at nearly five times 1999 levels. This past winter, through starting to warm off, saw the average gas heating household spend a record $867, a 17% increase, according to federal data. As for the predicted robust supply, the country's annual gas output has strangely slipped by 3% over the past 6 years. People inside and outside the industry say something is broken in the economics of natural gas. The bright dream of an economy built squarely on clean-burning natural gas is slowly deflating. Although we still derive almost a quarter of the country's energy from natural gas, its share is expected to slip in coming decades. It's unclear what effect those dire predictions will have on dozens of proposals to site liquid natural gas import terminals at U.S. ports, including five in Oregon, this according to the Oregonian.
President Evo Morales decreed he was nationalizing Bolivia's vast natural gas industry. Morales sent soldiers to occupy gas fields and threatening to evict foreign companies unless they give the Andean national control over the entire chain of production. The move fulfills an election promise by the leftist president, who has forged close ties with Cuba's Fidel Castro and Venezuela's Hugo Chavez, to increase state control over Bolivia's natural resources, which he says have been looted by foreign companies. Morales sent soldiers and engineers with Bolivia's state-owned oil company to installations and fields tapped by foreign companies, including Texas-based ExxonMobil and among others. The companies have 6 months to agree to new contracts or leave Bolivia, he said. State television aired footage of soldiers and police standing guard outside some gas installations and petroleum company offices in the eastern city of Santa Cruz, where much of the industry is based. Brazil is Bolivia's biggest natural gas client, followed by Argentina, and Brazil's demand has been rising rapidly due to power generation, cooking, and automotive needs.
Premier Silvio Berlusconi, the longest-serving leader in post-war Italy, resigned today to make way for a center-left government led by Romano Prati that must re-energize a moribund economy. President Carlo Ciampi asked Berlusconi to remain on as the caretaker prime minister during the 30-minute meeting at the Quirinal Palace. Berlusconi, leader of the Conservatives, elected in 2001, had steadfastly refused to concede defeat since the nation's April elections. It was not clear if Ciampi would immediately give Prodi the mandate to form a government. Prodi's center-left coalition scored a narrow election victory over Berlusconi and his conservative allies. but Chompy, whose term expires May 18th, had indicated he wants the next president to assume that duty. Prodi said he was still working on his cabinet lineup, which already has provoked some grumbling in his coalition. Berlusconi had vowed to fight the election results through legal challenges. He also has pledged to lead fierce political opposition in the legislature.
About 200 Shiites, many of them women in full-length black abayas, rallied outside the Green Zone to demand that U.S. and Iraqi forces do more to stop attacks on Iraqis. Some protesters waved large banners with slogans demanding better care for families displaced by sectarian violence. One weeping woman held up the ID card of her husband, saying he was killed in a drive-by shooting. Two Iraqi men, a soldier and a civilian, emerged from the fortified Green Zone, home of the U.S. Embassy and the Iraqi government, to meet with the protesters and take notes about their demands. Such demonstrations are rare in Baghdad because of fears large groups might attract suicide bombers. In the latest violence, four people were killed when a bomb exploded in a market in Mandain, a mostly Shiite town 14 miles southeast of Baghdad. Two people were wounded. In addition, two people were killed in drive-by shootings in Diyala province, northeast of Baghdad. U.S. officials hope the new Iraqi government, expected to be finalized this month, will be able to calm sectarian tensions and lure many Sunni Arabs away from the insurgency, so U.S. and other international troops can begin heading home.
A day-long protest dubbed A Day Without Gringos drew thousands of Mexicans into the streets yesterday and kept many away from U.S.-owned supermarkets and fast food restaurants to support rallies in the United States demanding immigration reform. Some Mexicans said staying away from U.S. business was tough, and customers streamed into some branches of Walmart, McDonald's, and Burger King in Mexico City. In the border city of Tijuana, across from San Diego, about 400 boycott protesters blocked half the access lanes to an international bridge to discourage Mexicans from crossing into the United States to shop. However, it was hard to measure the boycott's impact because business is usually reduced to a fraction of normal volume on Mexico's May Day holiday. Thousands of union workers who traditionally hold labor rallies on May 1st dedicated yesterday's marches to the cause, carrying banners that read, "Total support for migrants." The protests coincided with a nationwide day without immigrants in the United States.
Iraq has accused Iranian forces of entering Iraqi territory and shelling Kurdish rebel positions in the north, this according to the BBC. Iranian troops bombed border areas near the town of Hajj Omran before crossing into Iraq. The defense ministry in Baghdad said the Iranians targeted the PKK, a Kurdish group that has waged a 15-year insurgency against Turkey. The PKK is believed to have links with anti-Iranian Kurdish fighters. There are no details on casualties. The Iraqi defense ministry also says Iran launched a similar attack on Kurdish rebel positions in the same area on 21st of April. There are no reported comments from Tehran or on either of the alleged incidences.
There has been a car bomb attack near an oil refinery in Nigeria's Delta region. State officials said there were no casualties when the car blew up near the port town of Wari, but several cars were damaged. The car was parked at a truck stop used by oil tankers, which serviced the town's refinery. The MEND militant group said it carried out the blast as a warning against Chinese expansion in the region. Earlier this week, Chinese President Hu Jintao secured four oil drilling licenses for China in return for a $4 billion investment in Nigeria during a two-day visit. The Movement for the Emancipation of the Nigerian Delta Group, MEND, had also emailed journalists before the explosion announcing the attack was going to take place. MEND said the blast was a last warning to oil industry workers and warned China against further involvement in the region.
Dozens of opposition politicians, civil rights activists, and journalists will begin their formal treason trial in Ethiopia today amid calls for human rights groups and the EU for their unconditional release. This according to the Guardian. The 76 defendants who will appear before the Federal High Court in Addis Ababa were arrested following opposition protests last year, along with 25 others who were being tried in their absence. They could be sentenced to death under charges that also include genocide and armed conspiracy. In a report today, Amnesty International describes 40 of the defendants as prisoners of conscience who have not used or advocated violence and should be freed immediately. A group of Western diplomats in Addis Ababa voiced similar sentiments last week. The treason trial has already caused embarrassment to the British government, which has cut off direct budgetary support to Ethiopia in protest at the crackdown on the opposition. The Prime Minister, Meles Zenawi, was a key member of Tony Blair's Commission for Africa, which launched its report into ways to develop the continent in March 2005.
According to the BBC, Iran has strongly criticized the U.S. at the United Nations, accusing Washington of threatening to launch a military strike against its nuclear facilities. In a letter delivered to Secretary General Kofi Annan, Iran said the U.S. was openly planning to attack Iran in breach of international law. Officials from the five permanent members of the U.N. Security Council will discuss Iran in Paris today. Iran has resisted calls by the U.N. for it to suspend uranium enrichment. The rhetoric between the U.S. and Iran has become more heated following the U.N. Nuclear Watchdog's report on Friday, which found that Tehran had not complied with the U.N. demand to end uranium enrichment. Tehran insists it has the right to a peaceful nuclear energy program, although the U.S. suspects it is trying to develop an atomic weapon. In a letter to Annan, Iran's ambassador to the U.N. criticized U.S. President George W. Bush, who has refused to rule out a nuclear strike on Iran's targets. The letter referred specifically to a report in The New Yorker by journalist Seymour Hersh, which suggested U.S. military planners were considering a bunker-busting nuclear strike.
In the Philippine capital, Manila, police stopped thousands from reaching the presidential palace amid fears rallies would become anti-government protests. 5,000 anti-riot officers were deployed amid fears of a repeat of the 2001 May Day riots when government forces clashed with followers of ousted President Joseph Estrada. After rallies in Manila parks, about 7,000 activists and pro-Estrada supporters headed towards the presidential palace. As they marched in a narrow street towards the historic Mendiola Bridge, which has become a symbol of anti-government resistance, they were blocked by riot police. However, there were no reports of serious violence, and the rallies dispersed. Many protests were demanding the resignation of President Gloria Arroyo over allegations of corruption and vote rigging. Secretary General of the militant leftist group Bayan, Renata Reyes, said she only has herself to blame for the rising tide of protest against her regime.
Hundreds of thousands of people have joined May Day rallies across Asia, with protests sparking high alerts in the Philippines and Indonesia. In Indonesia, tens of thousands rallied against the planned labor law they say will undermine workers' rights. In Indonesia's capital, Jakarta, protesters gathered in the thousands, waving trade union banners and demanding planned revisions to the 2003 labor law be dropped. About 13,000 security personnel, including riot police, were deployed in the city. May Day is not a public holiday in Indonesia, but many factories and businesses were closed. Opponents of the revisions to the labor law say they will curtail workers' freedoms to organize and to strike, and will also reduce severance pay. Supporters say they will make Indonesia more competitive. Local media reports also spoke of large protests in the North Sumatran capital of Medan and in Makassar in South Sulawesi. Strong protest rallies were also held in Japan, Taiwan, and Cambodia, according to the BBC.
Russia is hiring a U.S. public relations company to improve its image as it hosts the G8 Summit of World Leaders, according to the Financial Times. The government has completed a deal with the U.S. agency Ketchum, worth millions of dollars, to advise Russia on how it should communicate with Western media. Russia's G8 presidency in 2006 includes a summit in July in St. Petersburg. The agency will address how to boost Russia's image as tensions about its strong position in the oil sector grow. President Putin's reputation has been under fire in recent months following the decision to sever gas supplies to Ukraine in January. And most recently feared increased when Putin accused European countries of increasing fears over the reliability of Russian energy supplies. He said Russian companies could consider no markets in Asia if they were unable to operate freely in Europe, a statement interpreted by some as a veiled threat. Other companies on Ketchum's client list include IBM, Kodak, FedEx, and the World Economic Forum. This from the BBC.
The polar bear and hippopotamus are the first time listed as species threatened with extinction by the World's Biodiversity Agency, according to the BBC. They are included in the red list of threatened species published by the World Conservation Union, the IUCN, which names more than 16,000 at-risk species. Many sharks and freshwater fish in Europe and Africa are newly included. The IUCN says loss of biodiversity is increasing despite a global convention committing governments to stem it. Over 16,000 species are included in this year's Red List, the most detailed and authoritative regular survey of the health of the plant and animal kingdoms. This represents more than a third of the total number of species surveyed. The list includes one in three amphibians, a quarter of coniferous trees, and one in four mammals. Polar bears are particularly affected by loss of Arctic ice, which the IUCN attributes to climate change. The IUCN says that with fisheries extending into ever deeper zones of the ocean, which are largely unregulated, populations of many species are set to decline sharply.
And now we're going to have some fun facts from Mother Jones Magazine. United Airlines has cut the pensions and salaries of most employees while at the same time promising 400 top executives 8% of the shares it expects to issue upon emerging from bankruptcy.
As CEO, pay among military contractors has tripled since 2003. For David Brooks, CEO of bulletproof vest maker DHB, it has risen more than 13,000%.
A minimum wage employee who works 40 hours a week for 51 weeks a year goes home with a little over $10,000 before taxes. Such a worker would take 7,000 years to earn what the CEO of Oracle makes in a year.
And five of America's richest people are Walmart heirs. This from the Mother Jones Magazine.
This has been the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, May 2nd, 2006. Chris Andre edited the news. KBOO Newsroom volunteers and reporters produced and edited the tape. Matt Bingle, our engineer this morning. Kathleen Stevenson is the AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Becca Bartleson.
And I'm Brian Smith.
Thanks for listening. We clear the air at 90.7 FM Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA. 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Be sure to join us for the KBOO Evening News at 5 p.m. Want to know what goes on in the KBOO Morning News? Volunteer in the AM Newsroom. Call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202. And Portland area weather. Today it's sunny, highs 65 to 70. Tonight clear, lows in the high 30s to low 40s. And coming up later,